This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
My aim as a veterinarian is to keep you, animals, and the world we share healthy and thriving. The novel coronavirus pandemic has brought into sharp focus the delicate balance of keeping zoonotic diseases under control. Zoonotic diseases are those that are shared by people and animals. And one of the most common worldwide zoonotic diseases is one that you probably never heard of. Staycations are likely going to be the norm for most Americans this summer. Getting outside with your dog, playing in streams and other waterways is the perfect way to cool off and get some exercise. It's also the perfect way to be exposed to a vaccine-preventable, potentially fatal disease, leptospirosis. My guest is Dr. Emilio DeBess. He received his veterinary and master's in public health degrees from the University of California at Davis. He is the current state public health veterinarian for the state of Oregon. His emphasis is in infectious and zoonotic diseases and a One Health approach to public health. He practices clinical medicine on the weekends and is the current president of the Companion Animal Parasite Council. Whew, he does a lot. We're going to be right back after this short break.
We have a 12-year-old German Shepherd named Sophie, and she became overweight, stinky, greasy coat, and lifeless almost. Then about 4 years ago, we found out she had several vertebrae fused together. She was unable to walk. The vet told us Sophie was going to have to be euthanized. I thought, I've got to do something.
DinoVite.com.
I remember Sophie starting the DinoVite, and she from day one has loved it. She is no longer stinky. She is full of life. DinoVite healed Sophie.
DinoVite is nutrition.
I truly recommend that people not wait until the vet recommends euthanasia. You have to get them on DinoVite right away while they're healthy.
DinoVite for life.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
I get my DinoVite from DinoVite.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. DeBess, with all that you're doing, thank you so much for taking the time for being with me on this podcast today.
I'm happy to be here.
So, Dr. DeBess, I mentioned leptospirosis. That's probably a word that most pet owners have not heard of. What is leptospirosis?
Yeah, so thank you for having me again. And so let's talk about leptospirosis. Leptospirosis is a bacterial disease. So there are different types of pathogens out there, viruses and bacteria. This one is a bacteria. And it's a bacteria that lives in water and in the environment. So we can actually find it just about everywhere. Parks, lakes, rivers, etc. And leptospirosis has the ability to infect both humans and animals, which is why we call it a zoonotic disease. And this particular organism has the ability to affect not only dogs, but also livestock and other animals as well. So it's a bacterial disease, and it really affects both not only dogs and cattle and other animals, but humans as well.
So you say it's in the water. How does it get into the water?
Right. So the way we usually think about conditions like this or bacteria getting into the water or the environment is by other animals actually infecting that waterway or that environment by either having an infected animal with a disease urinate in an area where the bacteria in water, which is an area where the organism can survive very nicely.
So you mentioned that wildlife can get it, cattle can get it. So I presume probably if you have a horse and you're trekking through some streams, cats, we know so many of them are now being kept indoors, but if you do have an indoor-outdoor cat, are they susceptible?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, cats are not susceptible to leptospirosis. And I think there's only been maybe one or two reported cases of cat with serology compatible with leptospirosis, but not necessarily infected with a disease, much like dogs, cattle, or wildlife would be.
It's amazing how all of our species are a little bit different as their susceptibility. And I know one of the things, and it's probably because I don't think about it enough. I'm in Southern California and a dog comes in and trying to figure out, oh, what's causing this? So for instance, a dog comes in and just doing right, doc. You know, maybe a little lethargic and it has some vomiting or diarrhea, and that could be due to so many different things. What would put the disease of leptospirosis maybe a little bit higher up on my list of possibilities? Why should I think of it? How should a client, a pet parent, think about maybe it's leptospirosis?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it's really important to make sure that we know what the presentation or the chief complaint looks like. And as you mentioned before, ain't doing right, right? So these animals are not wanting to drink or eat. Sometimes they're vomiting. They're just not feeling well. And they present to the veterinary clinic, right? So that could be a number of different diagnoses right there. So the recommendation at that point is not only to get a really good clinical history. I think we as veterinarians sometimes forget to get that really important piece of history that will help us connect the disease with a condition that we're seeing in front of us. And then beyond that, so ask about, do you go to parks? Do you go to the lake? Do you go, you know, to the river? Do you have contact with, does your dog have contact with other dogs? Are there things that, you know, have changed recently? So we just kind of try to remind the owner of those activities that could have happened within the last 2 weeks of that presentation. And the key really here is when these animals come in is to run a CBC and a chemistry panel. So we do a complete blood count and we do a chemistry panel that looks at organs like the liver and the kidney and the pancreas just to get a better assessment as to what's going on with this animal. And undoubtedly, when these animals are infected with leptospirosis, primarily they will have either kidney dysfunction or both kidney and liver dysfunction.
Is there any specific testing that can be done, and how accurate is it? Because, you know, we were all hearing about coronavirus and, you know, is it positive, is it negative, the sensitivity of the test. So what type of test and how sensitive is it?
Yeah, that's a great question because that's something that I talk to our veterinarians here in Oregon on a regular basis. The testing is a little bit interesting because we have now two different types of tests. So early on in the disease process, we can collect a urine sample and a whole blood sample, whole blood, and send it into the lab for PCR testing. So what we're doing is we're actually looking for the genetic material of the organism that will tell us, yes, it's there or no, it's not there. And the reason why we send both samples is because sometimes we find it in one and not the other. We know that leptospirosis is being shed in the urine, so the urine is primarily a sample that you need to collect. But urine and blood early on in the disease, within the first 4 days of not doing right, is usually very diagnostic. So it's a PCR test looking for the genetic material. The other test is called the microagglutination test, and that is a test that is a serum test. So it's not urine, it's not blood, but actually serum. And that's usually collected a few days after, like 7 days after the onset of illness. And that will tell us whether the body has developed immunity against this particular leptospirosis. And when that happens, then we get a positive test. The great thing about the microagglutination test is that it actually tests for different types of leptospirosis, so we have an idea what particular type and where it may have come from, such as either wildlife or cattle or other dogs.
It seems as though the timing of the testing is quite important, but what is the incubation period from a pet being exposed to now ain't doing right, doc?
Yeah, so we briefly talked about that, but the clinical signs usually appear somewhere between 5 and 15 days after exposure. So that's why when we ask those clinical questions and those exposure questions, we always should go back as far as 15 days before presentation, just so we understand what the potential could have been in terms of an exposure.
Dr. DeBest, you mentioned that pets can get exposed and people too by being in streams because animals have urinated and that urine gets into the stream. So then presume that urine that the veterinarian is collecting can be contaminated. And now you have the owner at home with a dog that sometimes, oops, you know, as they're urinating outside, they get some on their paws or they've licked themselves and now licking the owner. Is that the main way that a human can possibly be exposed from their pet?
Yeah, so humans can get exposed from their pets by having contact with urine. So it's not just touching the urine, right? But it's also making sure that, or when you touch the urine, that you don't touch your mucous membrane, such as your mouth and your eyes or even your nose. So we are always highly concerned about that contact that may happen. And it is important to remind people to wash your hands, especially if your animal is ill and you don't know what the illness may be, to be very careful about exposing yourself by way of a mucous membrane exposure.
So our mom and Dr. Fauci were correct. Wash your hands. Don't stick your fingers in your nose and your eyes and, you know, be cautious. After playing with your dog, you know, wash your hands.
Exactly. That's the best prevention that you can do. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands.
Corona, whatever it is, wash your hands.
Yes.
What are the symptoms, Dr. DeBest, that a human might encounter if they were exposed or they're now suffering from leptospirosis?
Yeah, so humans have a little bit of a different presentation. And they, again, show up not feeling well, but they actually have more of a liver dysfunction component to the condition. So they actually develop jaundice or they turn yellow. And that's a good indication that leptospirosis should be considered within the differential diagnosis of what the condition may be. So inappetence, not feeling well, very tired, muscle ache, sometimes vomiting, and beyond that jaundice seems to be kind of a key factor for human disease.
I understand that people can also get a rash from leptospirosis.
Yeah, so sometimes, in some cases, leptospirosis may actually cause thrombocytopenia, which basically means the platelet numbers goes down, and that sometimes causes a rash or the skin actually becomes bleeds a little bit. So it presents as a rash, and that's related to thrombocytopenia. Thrombocytopenia is both noted in animals and humans as well.
I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were talking about a new way that people are trying to have a little fun since Corona is closing down our public pools and beaches and, you know, what are people to do? So it was someplace back east had the great idea. They had their little block party and they got a dumpster like we typically throw our trash into. And I presume that they cleaned out the dumpster, which is moderately difficult to do. I don't think this was a new dumpster. And then they filled it with water and lo and behold, they had themselves a little swimming pool. And it's like, really, folks, this is not a good idea for all the possible diseases that can be in a dumpster, leptospirosis and otherwise. It's like, get yourself a blow-up swimming pool and stay away from your friends and wash your hands. Amazing,
yeah.
People do.
So remember that, you know, dumpsters are usually well visited by rats, and rats are the number one concern about leptospirosis in terms of human infection. We have seen, we did a study here in Oregon, which was also repeated in British Columbia, in which we looked at the rats in the Portland area and identified about 14% of those being positive carrying leptospirosis. So rats are really a significant source or reservoir of the disease. And it happens when you have, you know, a chicken coop out in the backyard, that you now have an explosive population of rats and potentially exposing yourself to leptospirosis, or whether you have a dumpster, much like you just talked about, with animals going in and out and urinating and defecating, that will potentially expose humans to leptospirosis as well.
So now that we're not going to do any dumpster diving, literally, I'd mentioned that leptospirosis is a preventable disease and there's a vaccine. And some people may, in the back of their minds, if they've owned pets for any length of time, dogs in particular for any length of time, will say, oh, wait a minute, I kind of remember 10, 15 years ago there being a leptospirosis vaccine and I think my pet got really sick and my vet stopped carrying it. Can you give us a little background about the vaccine?
Yeah, yes. So the vaccine is it's been around for a fairly long time. And over the years, I think we have seen veterinarians being very aware of the fact that even though it's a vaccine preventable disease, that the vaccine sometimes causes what we call an adverse reaction, meaning an inflammatory reaction that animals may suffer from after a vaccine. And adverse reactions are really some that we see both in the human world as well as the animal world. And some vaccines are more reactive and some animals may develop a vaccine, what we call a vaccine reaction to them. But things have changed. You know, we have evolved as our vaccines have, and we now have much better vaccines. And in fact, the latest vaccines are actually quite good and hardly ever cause any what we would call a vaccine or an adverse reactions. So vaccines have evolved much like other vaccines as well, and really do not cause as severe of a reaction as we have seen in the past.
Well, that's excellent, because I know we've offer that vaccine at our practice. And after listening to you, I think I need to offer it much more often. And we're going to talk about that right after this short break that we're going to take. Right now, I have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Emilio DeBess. He is a veterinarian as well as holding a master's in public health. He got it from UC Davis. Of course, he's fabulous because that's where I went to school too. He is also the current state public health veterinarian for the state of Oregon and the current president of Companion Animal Parasite Council. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. DeBess, I think that I know I was under quite a few misconceptions about leptospirosis. I'm in an area that I have lots of gated communities with little white fluffy dogs, and I tell people about the vaccine and they go, you're crazy. My dog is this little white fluffy dog. It's not going to get exposed to anything. and it's hard to convince them. How can I convince them that even their little pocket poodle needs to be vaccinated?
So it's really important to remind people that even though you have a pocket poodle or a pocket chihuahua, they just don't live in your arms or on your couch 24/7, right? So they will need to go outside to go to the bathroom a couple of times a day. And when that happens, we got to remind ourselves that wildlife is also present in our backyards. Raccoons go by, rats are present, other animals. That could potentially create an exposure to leptospirosis. So that contact with grass that could potentially be infected with the urine from a raccoon that happened to run through the night before while you were asleep, or a deer that went through your yard, or rats, because rats are present everywhere, that creates an exposure right there. And so they are not necessarily protected against leptospirosis just by being outside in your arms or on your couch 24/7, but they do go outside every once in a while, like a couple times a day, and that right there may constitute an exposure.
So it can just be a puddle. It could be from the sprinklers went off, and if that raccoon or rat had gone through and just happened, the urine gets diluted, there can be exposure.
Correct. That is correct. Any wet grass that you may have, any sprinklers that could have been turned on and now the organism has dispersed throughout your backyard, it's all considered to be a potential exposure.
Are there any states that are leptospirosis free?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is no. Even Hawaii, the state of Hawaii has leptospirosis. As you may have seen, you know, there are signs throughout the state of Hawaii saying do not swim, leptospirosis. It's kind of big lettering all over the place. So every state in the U.S. has leptospirosis, reminding you that this is a disease of wildlife, this is a disease of cattle and horses, and also a disease of pets. And we have wildlife, we have rats, we have deer, we have cattle, we have all different animals all throughout the U.S., and we see it all throughout the U.S.
Are there any states that are hotbeds for the leptospirosis bacteria?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because we always think about the southern states potentially being the more tropical-like states, but there's a lot of infection up in the Northeast. There are multiple studies that look at the Northeast. They look at the central part of the United States. They look at the southern part of the United States, and they look at California, and all of them have had a number of cases, with sometimes more present during the fall or during the rainy season than it is during other times of the year. But all states are actually affected, and they all share the same, you know, concern about leptospirosis.
All right, so those are the humid areas, the rainy areas. What if you live in Arizona, the Phoenix area, which is really dry and lots of sand, or out in the deserts? Or do you still have to worry about that?
That's a great question. Arizona just reported their largest outbreak of leptospirosis a couple of years ago.
Wow.
Unbeknownst to them, waterways obviously happened to go through Arizona as well, and a number of dogs became infected as well as cattle. So, you know, the reminder is that there are waterways throughout, that we all water our yards, that we all have standing water in different places of our neighborhoods, our communities, and the likelihood for exposure continues to be there. So even in dry, hot Arizona, outbreaks do happen, and we see that in the news, and we, you know, now understand how diverse and significant it is, which has really now created a new way of dealing with diseases in Arizona, as veterinarians now become aware of this particular pathogen.
Are there any age groups of dogs that seem to be especially prone to contracting this disease?
Yeah, so any animal that is not vaccinated is obviously susceptible or has a risk factor to leptospirosis. Our study, we did a study in 2015 in which we actually looked at different ages of dogs, different age groups. And we quickly learned that as sometimes puppies do get vaccinated for the disease and have the vaccine to protect them, but as animals get older, people tend to forget about vaccinating them. They're getting old, they're not as active, they don't go out as much. You know, there's a number of reasons why. And animals over 5 years of age were at a greater susceptibility to develop leptospirosis. So it is important to remind people to vaccinate them every year. It's because even as they get older, they still like to go out in the yard and they still like to go out swimming and they have potential exposures.
With the information that you've given us so far, Dr. DeBess, I'm sure people now are just, oh my goodness, you know, yes, my dog steps on wet grass, or yes, you know, there is a stream close by that the dog loves to play in and, you know, it's a great activity for it. And, you know, it's just, it lives to jump in that, you know, little stream. They're, I'm sure, wondering, but is it my neighborhood that has this problem? How do people know whether or not leptospirosis is in their community?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, even I've been tracking leptospirosis for the last 10 years, and I really depend on the news media to tell me there's an outbreak here, there's a case there. I talk to other state public health veterinarians, and I get small pieces of information from here and there. So what CAPC has done is, a couple of years ago, we got a group of very well-known scientists from the veterinary community and CDC to talk about leptospirosis and what would be the best way to report cases and to understand where cases were in the United States. And after that meeting, CAPC has now developed maps. And these maps actually provide timely information about leptospirosis in different counties in the United States. And this is relevant and really important because what we identify is really the tip of an iceberg. We know that per every single case, we potentially may have up to 20 other cases that have been undiagnosed. So it is important to, when you go to the CAPC maps and you actually realize that there's a case in your county or in the adjacent counties in your area, that leptospirosis is present in that area, in your area, and you need to take precautions. You need to think about making sure that your dog is vaccinated and take the necessary steps to prevent disease.
So, Dr. DeBess, CAPC that you keep mentioning is the Companion Animal Parasite Council, of which you're the current president. So, just people are, what's CAPC? So, okay, now I've been listening to the news and maybe I heard or didn't hear anything about leptospirosis. I understand that CAPC has a pet disease alert system now.
Yeah, so Pet Disease Alert is a website that has really amazing, great information for the pet owner and now has maps for leptospirosis. So pet owners can actually go to this website and learn about CAPC, learn about pet diseases, and learn about where leptospirosis may be in their area. It's a great resource and it's a way to keep informed. We're all looking at maps now. We all understand and hear data on a regular basis. And this is just an excellent way to keep people informed, veterinarians, pet owners, about leptospirosis.
So I know that CAPC has a great site. I use it all the time with my clients. You know, I do a test and find out that it has the internal organism Giardia. So instead of trying to explain it, and oftentimes I've just hit them with so much information, I'll go to the CAPC website, the guidelines, print off the information that talks about Giardia, what it is, how to protect it. But this is a little bit different. So this is an alert, which is a service. As I went to the site myself, going, oh, fabulous. And I signed up for it because I want to know about it. There's a cost. Can you tell us about that? And are there other diseases other than just leptospirosis that the alert will tell you about?
Yeah, so the alert has information about leptospirosis and people should sign up to learn more about disease in their area. And there's about a $5 charge for to sign up to this particular, you know, in this website.
And that's $5 a year. So that's a deal of the century.
Exactly. And then soon there will be more information about other diseases that affect our canine population. So there's more to come with different maps.
What I really liked about it myself, looking at the disease alert site, was the fact that I could put in three counties that I was interested in. So I put the counties that are right around me, because if one of my clients is going to be visiting someplace, I thought, oh, that would be good for me to know what's happening in my neighborhood, in my extended neighborhood. But oftentimes people, especially this coming summer, are going to be traveling and doing car trips, or they're going to be moving. And they'll say, so what diseases, doc, do I have to be worried about when I go to Iowa? It's like, you know, I'm not really sure what's happening in Iowa these days. But now there's a way with this service that I can see what's happening there.
It also has really great information about heartworm disease in the canine population, another preventable disease that veterinarians and the public always worry about. So it is a great website. It provides really good mapping information and even stories about different diseases, and a great way to keep in touch with what's going on.
All right. So I have this pet disease alert on my cell phone, and all of a sudden there's an alert that there is a leptospirosis case in my neighborhood, in my county. They're saying like there's one case. Besides stopping screaming, going, oh my God, there's lepto in my county. What do I need to do as a pet parent that I've now received this alert?
Yeah, so now you have received the alert. So a couple things. This is a, you know, it's in your county. We talked about the fact that it's the tip of the iceberg, right? So that there are more cases that potentially wildlife may actually be carrying the disease and spreading that. But you need to talk to your veterinarian about making sure that your dog is vaccinated and protected, and that you also share that with your community. So it's not just your dog, but your neighbor's dog and everybody else in the community that you care about. It's about a community approach to helping people understand that there's a disease process and that all pets need to be protected. As a reminder, this is a zoonotic disease and there's a potential for human transmission. So we not only take care of our dogs and ourselves, but also we take care of our community.
Is there a vaccine for people? Because people are saying, yes, my dog goes into that stream to swim and so do I.
Yeah, there's no vaccine for leptospirosis for humans. That has not. I think there was a vaccine a while back that was used by the military, but that has not been used for the general public.
Dr. DeBess, any words of wisdom, last little words before we wrap this up?
The key here is leptospirosis is a vaccine-preventable disease. And by signing up with this MAPS, you can learn so much more about what's in your area, not only about lepto, but heartworm disease. Key to success, you know, this is about your community, and this is about not only your pet and yourself and the potential for transmission, but also for your neighbors and the people that you care about. So sign up, learn about the disease, and then keep in touch with your veterinarian for the best prevention.
Dr. DeBess, thank you so much. Great information. I know that I'm going to become much more of an advocate to vaccinate all of my dogs in my practice, even the little white fluffy pocket poodles, for leptospirosis. So thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so very much, and have a great day.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week when Mark Winter, our producer, does a fabulous job of bringing this information to you to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.